Why would the world's sixth largest oil producer announce plans to build four nuclear reactors? And here's another question. Is there a new generation of nuclear power waiting in the wings to replace climate-killing coal? I'm Alex Smith, and I don't have the answers. Today we'll talk to someone who does. She's Dr. Helen Caldicott, possibly one of the world's most famous anti-nuclear campaigners. Helen, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with the Middle East. The United Arab Emirates has announced a new fleet of reactors. Can you tell us what they are up to?
Well, I think it's about male dominance and power and that ubiquitous hormone testosterone. The fact is that once you've got a nuclear reactor to make power, you've got a nuclear reactor to make bombs. It's one and the same thing. So you only need one, really, like North Korea, to enter the portals of the nuclear club and be imminently powerful. And so there's a mad scramble by many, many countries now, knowing that they can make bombs, to build nuclear power plants under the guise of, well, it doesn't produce any CO2 or global warming, which is also totally untrue.
It's my understanding this Korean reactor design has never been built, much less tested. Is that correct?
I don't know about the Korean reactor design, but I do know that the two reactors nominated to be built in America, the AP1000 built by Westinghouse, or designed by Westinghouse, and the French reactor built by Areva, the advanced pressurized reactor, APR, the NRC in America, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has not licensed either of them, saying that there are too many faults in the designs, which are extremely dangerous. There are two reactors being built currently, one in Finland, one in France, of the Areva design, and they're way beyond due date, and they're also at twice the amount that they said they would be. So it's not working out well at all. They say that China's building a lot of reactors, but I haven't seen hard evidence that they've actually started building them.
Well, let's take this Korean deal with the UAE. An Asian country wins a contract to build reactors in the Middle East. Do you think that signals a geopolitical shift in nuclear affairs away from the West?
So it's a South Korean reactor, that I hadn't read about that, nor have I read about a South Korean reactor design. I suspect it's probably an American design, but that I don't know. Does it signal new relationships with the Middle East? I'm not sure. I don't know what the relationship of South Korea is to the Middle East. I know they need oil, and I suspect they get their oil from the Middle East. I can't really comment any further on that.
All right. Well, you know, one thing I could say is that they've announced that they're going to build four reactors for the price tag of $20 billion. And to me, that sounds like a laughable underestimate. And I've been doing some digging around on this. And from what I've got out of the documents, it appears the Korean people could end up paying for any cost overruns. And surely they never voted for this. It seems just like another example of sort of power at the top going way beyond what the people would really accept.
Yeah, well, that happens all the time in the United States and Canada and Australia in terms of what they call defense, which is really war. The equipment that they build to kill people is very sophisticated. The people never asked about it. There's never a vote taken. And America actually is spending about nearly $1 trillion a year, if you count everything, on weapons and mass killing. Those sort of huge decisions right at the top are almost dictatorial decisions with no recourse to the public at large. $5 billion is, I agree, a gross underestimate for a reactor now. The Wall Street and Moody's are pricing at about $12 to $15 billion each for a 1,000-megawatt reactor. Have you read anything about what this design is that the South Koreans are mooting?
I have looked into it a little bit, and they have a reactor that they're building that they think will open in 2013 or 2014, and that's the design that they're selling the United Arab Emirates. But as they say, it hasn't opened. We don't know whether it'll really work or not. So I'm almost wondering whether this isn't nuclear vaporware. But, you know, another thing, Helen, that allows the Emirates perhaps to build it more cheaply than it would be built in America is they have a history of using construction workers from India and Asia, and they pay them very lowly, and they keep them in very poor conditions. And I wonder whether inexperienced and unhappy workers will impact the final safety of these nuclear plants if they are built.
Well, I think that's an obvious question and an obvious answer. No. Now, I often think about war and how we've got this huge arsenal of nuclear weapons still ready to go with 3-minute decision time, and everyone assumes that they're run and controlled by rational people. And the more I look at, for instance, the politics of the United States at the moment and these Tea Partiers and Sarah Palin, who's almost totally ignorant, she's an ignoramus, and how people are flocking to her and to others out of really superstition and lack of knowledge and rationality. And if you look back at history, some of the most dreadful things are done out of superstition from the midbrain, not the neocortex. And so unhappy workers obviously more prone to not concentrate, to make mistakes, and the like. I mean, we only need to think of when we've had a fight with our spouse or we've got impending flu and how we feel, how we make mistakes, and we're almost not responsible for what we do. So, yes, I think your point is well taken.
Well, as you know, with India, the George Bush administration has helped a new wave of proliferation get going. And it was the Bush administration who opened the door for the UAE to get their reactors. But it was the Obama team, one of their early acts in office in May. They said, yes, we're going to approve this. And the pact has been signed on December 17, 2009. So I wonder if you've seen other signs that President Obama is nuclear friendly.
He has not come down firmly on either side of the nuclear power issue. He seems to kind of have an open mind and be vacillating, but I know that Stephen Chu, Secretary of Energy, is very pro-nuclear. He comes from Los Alamos Labs, where they build the nuclear weapons and design them. I also know that John Holdren, his science advisor, he's very good on nuclear weapons and proliferation and eradication of same, but he's also likes Generation 4 reactors, which are the most satanic machines ever devised by man, run by plutonium, cooled by liquid sodium, which is explosive, plutonium being the most carcinogenic, dangerous substance there is on Earth. So, and it only needs 5 kilos to make a bomb, a nuclear bomb, atomic bomb. So he's in the hands of people who I wouldn't trust in this area as far as I could kick them. He needs advice from physicians and medical people about nuclear power. I need actually just half an hour with Obama one-to-one. He's highly intelligent. He's got little girls, and I'm sure I could educate him about the inherent dangers of nuclear power. And I would say that when the next meltdown occurs, and if it's in North America, that will signal the absolute end of nuclear power, and that's not if, but when. I asked a nuclear engineer the other day, what do you think the risks of a meltdown are? And he was an American. He said, 1 in 10 in the next 10 years, and he was applying that to the U.S.
Well, right. They've been updating a lot of the old reactors, just giving them extension after extension, and eventually they are going to go. Now, this is Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. We're talking with longtime nuclear watcher Helen Caldicott. She began her fame with the National Film Board of Canada production, If You Love This Planet, and now she has an internationally syndicated radio program of the same name. You can find it, listeners, at ifyoulovethisplanet.org. Well, Helen, I'm so glad you brought up this promise of new nuclear technology, and especially thorium reactors. Even Dr. James Hansen of NASA has written to President Obama recommending these things due to the extreme danger of runaway global warming. What should we know about thorium and these new so-called fourth-generation nuclear reactors?
Well, Dr. James Hansen, I totally respect for his attitude and knowledge about global warming, but he went to one conference at Argonne National Labs, came away very enthusiastic about Generation 4 or fast breeder reactors, you know, science is multifactorial, and you can be a very good meteorological scientist, but know nothing about nuclear technology, physics, radiation biology, and that clearly is James Hansen. So I'm very concerned about what he's up to. Now, thorium reactors, there's a lot of thorium around. It's part of the decay cycle of uranium. It's a naturally occurring product, but it's not itself innately fissionable. There are only two isotopes that are. One is plutonium-239, and one is uranium-235, which can be used for, well, they fission, so they produce E equals MC squared, a huge amount of energy, which can either be used in an atomic or hydrogen bomb or in a nuclear power plant. Same process. Thorium is not innately fissionable. So to make it fissionable, you have to mix it with uranium-235 in a nuclear reactor, fission the 235. The thorium captures neutrons and turns into uranium-233, which actually it also is fissionable. So it's extraordinarily expensive to get to that position, and then you have to remove the uranium-233, which is really dangerous stuff, by reprocessing. In other words, you chop the extraordinarily radioactive fuel rods apart by remote control, because they're so radioactive you mustn't go near them. You then dissolve these pieces in concentrated nitric acid, and from this satanic solution, you remove uranium-233, and then you have to turn it back into a metal again and fashion it into fuel rods and put it into a reactor. In other words, the process is so extraordinarily complex and expensive, it will never come to fruition. That's the first thing. Second thing is that it's been the dream of physicists ever since, really, the Manhattan Project, to recycle plutonium, which, as I've just said, is fissionable, into nuclear power plants to fission it for electricity. Less than a millionth of a gram of plutonium is carcinogenic, but probably 10 to the minus 9 grams. As I've said, you only need 5 kilos to make a bomb, or actually 2.5 kilos. The design is on the internet. They want to fuel these reactors. They're called fast reactors because the neutrons move fast, and fuel them with 5 to 15 tons of plutonium. 5 kilos is critical mass. In other words, if you get 5 kilos of plutonium together, you get a spontaneous nuclear explosion. These things are cooled by liquid sodium, which, if exposed to air, there's a crack in the pipe or the like, it either burns or explodes, and they've had such accidents at fast reactors in the past, had to close them down. So if you lose your coolant, the plutonium, as in any nuclear power plant, will melt down. It will reach critical mass, and there could be a massive, massive nuclear explosion scattering 5 to 15 tons of plutonium to the four winds. 1 pound of plutonium, if adequately distributed, could cause cancer in every person on Earth. Now, you can't do that, but that's an example of how extraordinarily toxic it is. So if you scatter 5 to 15 tons of plutonium with a nuclear accident and massive explosion, it could be almost seen from Mars, and it would be beyond catastrophic. And these are the machines that people like Chu and John Holdren and James Hansen are advocating. I mean, it's beyond comprehension for me as a physician to imagine how these people could possibly think that these things are viable.
Well, you know what I think it is, Helen? I think it's a little bit of almost madness in the face of the threat of climate change. I mean, if the thing goes out of control, if we have mass warming and people are saying, well, look, people haven't changed their lifestyles much. We haven't really reacted to it yet. And we've got to get rid of coal, and we need a constant source of power, and nuclear can do the job. Even George Monbiot threw up his hand saying, well, if it's awful nuclear power or mass extinction, I'll have to take the nuclear power.
Well, it's a stupid, vacuous argument. I commissioned a study 2 years ago called Carbon Free, Nuclear Free. You can download it at IEER.org, Carbon Free, Nuclear Free, a roadmap for America by 2050 to be totally carbon free, nuclear free, with available technology and conservation right now. For instance, Canada could get all the electricity it needed from renewable sources, geothermal, wind, you're absolutely blown by wind, and sun. Even in the middle of winter, you can still capture sun for solar power. Every house in Canada, every house in America should have a solar panel on it and a solar hot water system. All cars should be electrical, powered by solar power. You have a solar panel on your garage or parking lot, plug the car in, charge it up, and you're off for the day. If you read this study, Carbon Free, Nuclear Free, you will see it's done by a very, very brilliant physicist. It's all costed out. It should be happening now. The only reason it's not is because politicians are caught by their back pocket, their hip pocket, by the major corporations in the world, coal, oil, and nuclear. And particularly in Canada, this is so. I've been several times to Alberta where it's an Earth is flat society. I mean, they don't even accept global warming. And they're getting these coal tar sands out by boiling the earth and extracting the coal tar and sending it down to America to be burnt to produce more global warming. I mean, the whole thing is absolutely ludicrous and, if I may say, insane, because the answers are here. The politicians are scientifically illiterate on the whole, don't understand what they're doing, and it's politics as usual, as, you know, fiddling while Rome burns.
And just a note to listeners, you can also get Helen's important 2006 book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming or Anything Else. Look for that. And her newly revised version of her 1992 book, If You Love This Planet, was just published by W.W. Norton in September 2009. Helen, can you tell us, what are you working on next?
Look, it's a good question, and I'm just powering myself up to do it. Psychologically, I want to write a book called Why Men Kill. I'm going to dedicate it to Donald Rumsfeld, whose photo will be on the frontispiece. I don't understand it. There are a lot of literature now on hormonal receptors in the brain, the sex hormones, and the influence it has on that they have on behaviour, very different in males and females. You know, I'm reading a book called Sociopaths Next Door. 1 in 25 are sociopaths who have absolutely no conscience at all, but are very charming and intelligent. And some of those sociopaths rise to the top. For instance, I would say that Cheney is one and Rumsfeld is one. I don't think George Bush is, because he just doesn't have the neurons to get there. I think he's a very damaged character psychologically. But there is huge literature now. I mean, I can just look at my bookshelf that I've got to read, and I see the Nazi doctors, the Great War, Bush's brain, Bush on the couch, fatal choice, and weapons for all, war and globalization, guardians of the arsenal, against all enemies. These are the books I've got to read, and I sort of look at them and my eyes go crossed, but I want to read them. I don't want them to influence me too much, like Picasso was influenced when he went to art school and took years to get back to his original brilliance. I want to read them just for background briefing for myself, and then I just want to write what I think. So we'll see.
Why Men Kill. We'll be looking for it. You've been listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott on Radio EcoShock. North Americans can find a listing of stations carrying her radio program at ifyoulovethisplanet.org. For Australian stations and a lot of other good information about our guest, simply go to helencaldicott.com. Helen, you've been an inspiration for me and for millions. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, that's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Alex Smith. Download this interview as a free MP3 from our website, ecoshock.org.